You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Frederick got me. I had never watched, Maury Povich. I can't think of Chicken Hawk. It's a show where you're pretending like you're somebody else to go on a date with somebody, and then they bring
Catfish.
Catfish, Chicken Hawk. Catfish.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we invite your apprehensive listeners.
Welcome to the Afro Existential Podcast, a play and podcast in one. We're your hosts, Blaine Sparks Teamer and Indira Wilson. And for the next 25, give or take minutes, we ask you to take a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and think outside your box.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Afro Existential Podcast.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you so much for coming back.
Yes. Thank you for coming back.
This week, you guys will notice that there is not a new episode up because we are preparing you for the finale.
Finale. Yeah.
Yeah. And we have put together episodes 1 through 4 for your listening pleasure.
So they're all put together into one thing. So if you haven't listened to them, or if you have, you can listen to it all together in one piece. And that's going to get you all ready for the finale.
And boy, oh boy, do we have a finale for you. Not only do we have the final episode of the fantabulous play Dead Weight, A Journey in Afro-Existentialism, but child, we have the great Tanya Pinkins as our interviewee.
Yes, it is such an insightful and funny and fun interview. I cannot wait for everyone to hear it.
She is a sage.
Yes. And then, to say the least.
And we love her.
And we love her to pieces. I'm so honored that she gave us her time to do this interview. Fun. And we're going to learn all about our nuisance value. What is your nuisance value? What does that mean? She's going to break it down to us. So get ready.
Yes. And if you get your notebook out, honey. Take some notes. And if you haven't listened to it already, please listen to the trailer for the coming soon of Miss Tanya Pinkins. It's very fun.
Very fun.
And next week, we'll have a big announcement.
Bum, 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 bum.
The Afro Existential Podcast is going to new and brighter places.
Dun, 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 dun. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the neighbor. Someone referred to the neighbor as the deranged neighbor.
Ooh, the neighbor is causing a lot of controversy, huh?
The neighbor is causing... And I was trying to kind of understand it. And I think what I came away with was that a lot of times, you know, he's introduced by Georgina, who's saying, like, look who didn't take their medication today. So she's kind of already dismissed this person before we really kind of even see him as being medicated off
in some type of way. Yes. And for her to even interact with him appropriately, she can't even start because he hasn't even taken his look. He's
right. So clearly he sounds different and he probably looks different than what they are used to. So what happens is that a lot of times, and I've experienced this throughout my life, you are dismissed regardless of what you're saying based upon the packaging. So your message can't even be heard because of what you sound like. And people have these implicit or unconscious biases.
So, Blaine, while we're sitting here talking about implicit and unconscious bias, why don't you tell the people what that is?
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
I would love to. Give me a beat.
What are you going to do downtown?
Get down.
What are you going to do downtown?
Get down.
A pygmy's a tiny little human being.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Explicit bias is a prejudice in favor of or against one thing, person, or group compared with another, usually in a way that's considered to be unfair.
A pygmy's a tiny little human being. What are you going to do downtown?
Everyone holds unconscious beliefs about various social and identity groups.
The whole thing is ridiculous.
Get down.
Unconscious or implicit bias are social stereotypes about certain groups of people that individuals form outside their own conscious awareness.
A pygmy's a tiny little human being.
Unconscious bias is far more prevalent than conscious prejudice and often incompatible with one's conscious values.
The whole thing is ridiculous. What are you going to do downtown?
Get down.
Biases, conscious or unconscious, are not limited to ethnicity and race. Though racial bias and discrimination are well documented.
Go back to sleep.
You need to know the terror.
Because I'm being punished.
One's age, gender, gender identity, physical abilities, religion, sexual orientation, weight, and many other characteristics are subject to bias.
All that's been explained leads to one conclusion.
A pygmy is a tiny little human being.
Go back to sleep.
The whole thing is ridiculous. What are you going to do downtown? A pygmy is a tiny little human being.
The whole thing is ridiculous.
And so what he talks about in the elevator, they just think that, you know, they just kind of just completely dismiss.
They can't even hear him.
They cannot even hear him, you know, because of what he looks like and what he sounds like. And, you know, for me, when I look at, so often I look at what's happening with the Black Lives Matter movement, how many people have got tied up into the name of it? And that's where they stop. So all of the other messaging and what they've been saying for the past few years, people can't even hear because they're like, well, all, okay, well, but what are they, what are these people trying to do and what are they saying? You know, and now we're looking at these protests where people are now starting to kind of get what they were talking about. And so I think too often we get so wrapped up in the packaging, but we're not really looking at the significance of the message.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even if he is, I wouldn't call him deranged, but...
I think he's, I always think of him as eccentric.
He's eccentric. Right. Right. And
at most.
Right. And it's interesting because it's interesting on a couple fronts because we have eccentric people in our communities, mm-hmm. right? You know, he is the, you know, how did Tina Turner get that accent? How did Eartha Kitt get that accent? How did Roscoe Lee Brown get that accent? You know, mm-hmm. so we have all types of people in our community, but I think oftentimes the stories we get, so many people are left out.
Mm-hmm.
So we live in, you know, this is a Los Angeles story. So there are people from all over the world converging at this location. You know, it's the cross of people who are on their way up, crossing with people who are on their way down.
Right.
And so that character, people like that do exist in our world. And
in our building.
And in our building.
And on our street. Yes.
And, but so many of the stories that we experience, especially as with Black people, and it's so, it feels so kind of limited and constrained. So when you see this character, he definitely, oh my gosh, this is so out of place. And so I can't even, he doesn't fit. Like you can't even hear what he's saying. Which is really unfortunate because how many people do we dismiss?
And I definitely think that's a symptom of, you know, up until, like I said, up until now, have we been able to tell more stories, more mm-hmm. of our stories?
Right.
And so often the marginalized don't get a story.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
You know, we're still having to discuss whether or not people with disabilities should be represented in our stories. People right. with mental illness should be represented in our stories as right. as part of our day-to-day life. And I think it goes to not always understanding or being taught to learn how to understand people with mental illness, but then also a basic lack of representation. So when they see somebody like the neighbor or hear somebody like the neighbor, they don't have enough, I think maybe storytelling layers already laid down to understand how to absorb. So he's beating against their basic sensibilities. People are going like, well, who is this? What is this supposed to be?
Right.
Versus being more inquisitive, like, oh, well, who is this?
Right. What
is this supposed
mean?
To be?
Right.
He's so outside of what's happening, even in the moment, that it surprises me that it doesn't turn on people's senses to go, okay, wait, what is he saying?
Right.
Why is he here? And why is this character being utilized to tell this?
Right.
Why is this character challenging? It's a challenging character for Georgina, and it's a challenging character for the audience, that I think people need to go back and listen to what he's actually saying. And I just want to bring up a point. He's challenging to Georgina, but when Helen meets him, I met your neighbor.
They just click.
I just like, hey, it's kind of like Helen is so open.
She's so open, yeah.
Just to the world, and she's right. just experienced. She's free of, you know, she hasn't told all these lies.
Right.
She is who she is.
Right, right.
You know, whereas Georgina is totally closed, and she's trying to put on a front and keep up the appearances. And,
right.
You know.
And you know that now, you know that Helen has, you know, traveled the world.
Traveled the world.
She's been exposed to all types of people. So she's able to be very fluid and get in the door. She's able to get in that door into the building.
And I think that's the prime. That's the key, is that it always goes back to experiences and education.
Right.
That people are afraid of the unknown.
Right. Right.
And the only way to move forward is to continue to expose people, is to have an education about other people.
Right. And listen.
And listen. And recognize you may not know anything about this person, and that might be creating your implicit bias, your unconscious bias. We right. all have it. We right. all have it. We don't learn enough about ourselves.
Right.
Yeah, we could have an education about ourselves. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. That would be an interesting education.
Right. Or, you know, what I really often try to do is, if something like this comes up for me, I try to then put the mirror to myself.
Yes.
And go, okay, why am I having this reaction to someone that's so eccentric, or someone that is so this or so that? Like, what is that triggering in my own body? Like, why is that happening? Right. And that's the important conversation that you have to kind of work through. Like, why is this so threatening? Or why does this person seem so strange? Am I eccentric that way? And, you know, how
do people... See, I do think too, that there's a barrier in society where, like, you're able to say that to yourself. You're able to admit that to yourself, right? Mm-hmm. But there's also a space where we're not able to admit that to the world. You're not able to say, oh, I feel threatened by that person.
Oh, right.
You know, we're all supposed to have some very high level of understanding about everything. Otherwise, we're so ignorant, we have to get canceled and we can't be spoken to ever again.
Right.
You know, right. You're not allowed to admit that and say, I find that so interesting in this whole Black Lives Matter, this movement that we're going through, that needs to be some safe space, because we know that it's fear. You know, we know that it's fear of losing power. You know, we know that it's fear of for some people, interracial mixing, which makes people push back and say, no, all lives matter. You know, right. That makes people push back and go, you know, that they can't, they're not, a, there's not a space for them to admit that they have these biases.
Right.
Because the moment you admit that you have a bias, the moment you say, I feel threatened, you know, which is irrational in an enormous amount of cases, you are, at this point, you get very canceled. You know, you have to be, say the right thing. You can't, there's no truth telling from the other side. There's no space for truth telling from the other side.
Right.
But it, that you bringing up that point where you turn the mirror on yourself, if you can't do that, you can't move forward. If you can't ask yourself and admit to yourself, oh, why do I feel threatened? You can't ever say it's not right to feel threatened. If I had a little bit more education about this person.
Or, you know, and you're using the word threatened, I would also add like annoyed.
Annoyed, yeah.
Like, why does that loud person, why does that loud person annoy me? Am I loud? Maybe I'm loud. Oh, I am loud. People have called me loud.
Hands up. Ditto.
So,
but whether we do it publicly or privately, there we have to give ourselves that type of space where we can turn the mirror on ourselves, where we can ask ourselves these questions, and where we can question our own motivations, where we can, you know, try to make actual changes in our perceptions of people.
And really look at our unconscious and implicit biases and know the difference and make it a decision to address them, you know, or say, I'm not going to, I know I have these biases, I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and that's, you know, that's being honest, but you first have to, you know, at least admit that they are there and that they ultimately have an impact.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So today we have a great, fantastic interview for you.
The wonderful Mr. KJ Middlebrooks, who plays the various host in our play.
Yes, it's Alex Winters, child. Alex Winters.
The host of Who's That Baby's Daddy? And the host of Celebrity Gossip News.
Yes, and one of the loveliest people we've ever met. So enjoy.
We invite your apprehensive listeners.
Ladies and gentlemen.
We would like to welcome the multi-talented actor, KJ Middlebrooks, to the Afro Existential Podcast. Hello, KJ.
Hello, hello. Please, no applause. Please, no. Sit down, everyone. Sit down.
You've been listening to the wonderful play, Dead Weight. KJ plays multiple roles in the piece. My favorite being the host, Alex Winters. You are shooting blanks, Colt. You are not that anybody. Yeah.
My mix of Oprah and Jerry Springer.
And KJ is also a voiceover actor and content creator, and seriously, one of the nicest people we have ever met. Aww. So we are so happy to have him.
So happy.
Yeah, thank you for letting me be here and for giving me some place for my wife not to look at me.
During the pandemic, only during the pandemic. You
also play celebrity gossip host who covers Marissa's untimely demise in Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles. And both hosts highlight the idea of suffering as entertainment.
Absolutely. And that's the real thing in terms of what happens in entertainment now, that it seems like, especially for Black people, that somehow all of our characters are somehow based in the struggle of being Black or ties back to slavery. And, you know, someday could, I don't know, I'd just be a doctor or, you know, just be
a bird watcher.
Bird watcher that's Black. But it does seem like what they want to see or what resonates with people is seeing the struggle.
Every moment of our life, believe it or not, is not tied into pain and suffering and brutality. A lot of times I'll watch a movie and I'm just like, okay, what's going to happen to mama? Who's going to be killed? Mama's going to be sick. Daddy got cancer. Who's going to jail? And I'm just in angst, you know, and then nothing happens. And I just like, oh,
we made it through the movie.
Mama lived.
Mama lived.
She made it.
Mama lived. Daddy lived.
A lot of our history here has been very painful. And then a lot of the people who have been telling our stories, you know, they all they're ever taught in history is slavery, civil rights, gang war, gangs in the inner city, and crack. And then this one white woman out here that saves everybody. You know, the she's a teacher. She's a civil rights activist. She's a football coach. And then she's adopting kids, you know.
Wasn't there that lady that got into the NAACP that turned out to be white? But
Rachel Dolezal.
We reference her. She's referenced in the play as being transracial.
Yeah, she's transracial.
So why can't we be trans affluent? I mean, she put on, she got a tan, got some braids, and she got a Netflix special. So why can't we be trans affluent?
Which I'm refusing to watch, but I feel like I'm about to have to, so I can just be a part of the conversation.
Able to reference it, right. Which was like last year. The conversation was last year.
Right.
Oh, no.
right. As a storyteller and a performer, how do you approach your creative process? And what type of stories would you like to see told?
My creative process is trying to get two things. One is grounding it in something real, something I've experienced, somebody I know. And then also asking myself the question, what's something I haven't seen before? And trying to find a mesh between those two things, a character that I know experiencing something I've never seen before, and then what that discovery is. I would really like to be on one of the Star Trek series. I love where they're going and what they're exploring. And again, it takes it to the next level, usually, of it's beyond culture. All that's been handled and fixed, and now what's happening now. And so I love that environment.
And you totally should. As we were preparing the questions for this, I was going through and thinking about this, like, where could KJ be? And I was trying to think of all the different things and all the different shows. And I was like, what you just said, that would be perfect.
I'd love it.
Star Trek. So exploring space.
Yes.
As an actor and as a performer, as a creator here, you know, how do you remain balanced, you know, mentally as an actor, you know, with things like this coming towards you, but then also just the general struggle of remaining a performer in this industry?
The honest answer is that I don't remain balanced. It's having an awareness that when you get out of balance, what you need to take care of yourself. And one of the things that I need is definitely family time or time with close friends, where it's not about the rat race. What have you gotten? Where have you gotten to? The other side is, in terms of going out and being an actor, is never having the mindset that I'm competing with anybody else for a part, and trusting the parts that I get, those are the ones I was meant to get. And the ones that I don't get, that was meant for somebody else. Because if I ever step into that mindset of that guy took my part, or I should have been doing this, then you stay in that negative energy. You got to stay in a place of trusting the roles that you get, the parts that you get, and then network and play with friends. You know, that's the best advice I have.
Are you originally from California?
Nope, I am from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a Southern gentleman that has come out to the wild, wild west.
So what are the top five important things that you learned living in California that if somebody was coming here could be helpful for them to know?
If you're moving out here, my first advice is to not come out here by yourself, to move out here and crash with somebody you know. To not make it about, I got to find a place, I got to have an apartment. Like, crash with somebody, slip them some money, put food in their refrigerator, and get the lay of the land from somebody else's house that you know, and use that as kind of a reconnaissance of figuring out what area works for who you are. And also have a long-term plan. Don't think that it's going to happen overnight. And, you know, you got to know why you're doing this. if you don't love it, if you're after something else, this is not the career for you, because it's a marathon. It is not a sprint. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the fuel to keep going, to keep getting up every day, to navigate the no's, because you're going to get no's, you know, choose something else. And that's totally cool. And also be a collaborator, you know, be someone that loves to contribute to someone else's project and help. And that's how you'll keep building and build your network, value people. The fifth thing, yeah, don't quit, you know, just don't give up on yourself. You got to believe in you before anybody else is going to believe in you. So you got to love on yourself. You got to know what you need to get yourself up every morning. And so take some time to learn about yourself. What are the things that you need to refill your energy? If you were a cell phone, how do you plug in and recharge? Know that and be able to set that up for yourself so that you can recharge yourself. It's going to drain you. Like we're talking about in terms of Afro existentialism, the game is stacked against you, and you've got to figure out your ninja way, your Jedi way, to flip the script and be recharging yourself when they think they're draining you down. You got to be real with yourself and to not always try to be that younger past version of yourself. You got to create yourself from where you are and go after the roles that reflect who you are. You know, that's why you got to have friends, because friends will tell you the truth.
Well, friends, so I was watching, what's it called? The J-Lo movie where she's the dancer.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know right. what I'm talking about? What's
Hustler,
it called?
Hustler.
Hustlers.
Right.
And last night around 1 a.m., I decided that I was going to reinvent myself as J-Lo. That's what I decided. I decided this 50-year-old woman, 50, can look like this. Dare I say, I could try too. I mean, it's possible, right?
Yeah.
And I've never tried that. I mean, I've been playing 50 since I was 25. I wish I was lying. I've been
Well, you know, it's so funny because when I wrote Box Seats, that play, there was a daughter who I wrote specifically for Indira because the daughter was the same age of Indira. Uh-huh. So I said, I specifically wrote this character for you because you would be hilarious.
And she I is think the I same was, age. I was too old.
Same age as you were.
I know, but I think I thought I was too
old.
Right,
you were like, I'm too old. I have to play the mother or the grandmother.
Like, I'm the grandmother. I'm like, that's how it would have gotten in my mind.
Right. Mm. But now, see, you've gotten it out. It's gone.
Yeah. You know, I never like anybody who's doing their part. I'm like,
right.
<You're not laughs> they don't get it. They don't get it. Just for Christ's sake.
And while while we're touching on that, I want to say the Box Seats experience, getting to do kind of a table read in front of an audience, was really fantastic.
Thank you so much.
To get to do and play on stage and the dialogue, getting laughs from the audience. That was a treat. I was so grateful to get to play around in that sandbox.
Thank you so much.
Hopefully that'll be the next one, Blaine, of the play series. I'm very inspired by this new wave of trying to tell your everyday story, which is another reason why I love this piece.
So Oliver says to his mother, do you believe that people can change? And Georgina says, no, not at all. We are who we are on the first day of kindergarten. Can you recall your first day going to kindergarten?
It's funny. What I remember most about my kindergarten or nursery experience was that, fortunately or unfortunately, my mother was a teacher at Spelman College. And so I ended up in nursery there on the campus. So unfortunately for the teachers, I was familiar with the whole campus. So I found ways to escape nursery school. I would literally, when they let us out for PE, I would make a bolt for the gate, and there was a section of the gate that was small enough that I could get through, but a grown-up person couldn't. So by the time they doubled back through the building, I was gone. Right. So
just
my
to go
early
hang out or to go find your mama? Just to go hang out?
Well, no, it turned out my grandmother was actually on campus as one of the dorm mothers. So I would actually go over and hang out with my grandmother. That's one of my earliest memories of, you know, was because I knew my way around. It was like, what's this new thing y'all telling me to do? I'm not going to do this. And
right.
My own thing. So I guess if we use that as the basis for what you said, I guess that's still what I'm doing today. Yeah, I still have figured out my own way to do things. And I do believe in get a lay of the land first so you know where things are.
Right, wow.
Take yourself there. So yeah, I guess that is true for me in a certain way. Because
that's awesome.
I had already been there pretty much. Well, right. I mean, my grandma would feed me and let me watch TV. That's a lot of fun in school.
And she was probably so happy to see you. She knew damn well you were at school. She knew you were supposed to be somewhere. She's like, oh, come in here. Sit with mama. Let's watch One Life to Live. This is with her baby, her grandbaby.
Yeah. They eventually got me out of that and got me to stay there. But yeah, that is my earliest memory of school was getting out of there.
Wow. Do you remember yours, Indira?
So much of my kindergarten is ingrained on my brain. It's like not even funny. But I've been trying to think of like the essence of who I am, you know, and how that started in kindergarten. Like I've always wanted to be one of these people. By second grade, I remember telling my grandmother I couldn't spell important. And I came home crying because I was like, how am I ever going to be important if I can't spell it? And I wanted to be like, I'm going to do my best here. And you're going to see, you know, just how great I am, you know, but even not so much in comparison to the other people, but I wanted to be appreciated for my intelligence. However, my mouth, you know, sort of has always gotten in the way of that. I'm just yellow and bright and loud. Yeah. And so it was anything I said, I was the one talking. Anything that happened, I was the one you could see. You know, in the play, Georgina and Oliver pack up the dead husband/father into the family trunk and they transport his body back to his job. Because there's a higher insurance payout if he dies at his job. Now, the question to you, KJ, is would you move a body for money? And is there someone who you know that would do it with you if you did?
I am an honorable man. However, yes to question one and yes to question two.
And who would help you move this body?
Wait, I got to put their name out there? See, this is being recorded.
Well, How about relationship?
Yeah. Well, I am part of a fraternity. And so I have several fraternal brothers that I know if I picked up the phone and called them, they would not have a question. They would come and help me handle business.
You know what would be a really good code word for that is if you ever called somebody, you prearrange and said, it's Thursday and I'm cooking collard greens and shrimp and grits, cornbread. And if you get here quick enough, there will be mac and cheese.
And say it with that inflection.
Can you be here for dinner? And if they say, I am full, the answer is no. If they say, I'm starving, they're on their way. But each thing means something more. If it's three items, it has hit the fan.
What if they say, and who else is coming to dinner?
Just you.
Just you.
Because I made too much and it's a mess over here. AJ, this has been a pleasure and certainly a lot of takeaways for me. I have to say, and this is really the way, look, if this podcast don't help nobody else, it sure is helping me.
Oh, good.
Every time I'm like, this is why God had us do this. This has helped me. This helps me so much. Every time I'm like, this is good advice. Yeah. If you haven't listened to Dead Weight, A Journey in Afro-Existentialism, we hope that the audience will continue to listen.
But I was listening to the stuff today and it is funny. It was actually so funny. Good for me because it's been long enough that I had forgotten parts of it.
Right.
hearing stuff again was really like, oh yeah, I remember laughing about that when I was reading.
Now, I don't think you're only there for your segment.
So I didn't know all that had transpired before. So.
Right. Right.
So you'll get to be listening to this almost like a new listen to it.
It was great. It was great.
All right, thank you so much, sweetheart.
Thank you, AJ.
You're very welcome. Thank you, guys. Again, it's great to get to play with you guys, and thank you for every opportunity that you've given me.
Thank you guys so much for joining us again for the Afro Existential Podcast.
Have a great day on purpose.
Ladies and gentlemen.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.